It's just one of those mornings. With, of course, the news according to me. Yeah, it's one of those mornings. It's an interesting morning. I woke up at home this morning. That's different. It happened yesterday, too. It was 2 days in a row. I'm not sure how I can take that. And tomorrow, I will also wake up in my own bed, but not for a couple, I'll be gone for one night. I guess I'll be gone for one night. I'm up in Appleton on Thursday night. And then my my lovely wife and I will be going to Chicago for a couple of days for the Labor Day weekend. There's a little thing called Bike the Drive. And my wife and I, we have a sailboat on Lake Michigan. Of course we do, because we're rich capitalists with a big yacht. That's what we are. Great big yacht. full crew, get to all the people, pursers, all that stuff. I play all those roles. I have different hats I wear. And we got this little sailboat. We're going to sail it over to from Indiana. We're going to go from Indiana to Chicago on probably early Saturday morning, I'm thinking. Might leave Friday night. Depends on what the weather's doing. There's a good possibility, I haven't even looked at the moon. If the moon is bright and the winds are light, we may just push off the dock Friday night and just kind of drift along out there in the moonlight until the wind picks up the next morning. It's either that or we wait around till the next morning and leave, and then we'll probably be a couple miles difference between the two. We'll probably sit out there with no wind all night. Or it could be really windy. Who knows? With the storm having passed through, with Ida, the remnants of Ida circling around. Who knows? We're going to take our bikes on the boat. And when we get up to Chicago, we're going to do this thing called Bike the Drive on Sunday with some of her family's coming into town. And when we get done with that, we're going to go back to Indiana on Monday, probably Monday. So there won't be a show, needless to say, on, let me look at my schedule here for just a real quick look at my schedule. Brief look at my schedule. I don't know what time I come back, or what time I start on Friday here. My schedules. Oh, look at that. I had to change my password because, you have to do that because it's, security. So I'm not sure what time. I don't know if there'll be a show. Let's just put it this way. I don't know if there might be a show. Probably won't be a show on, there might even be a show on Thursday morning. There might be a show tomorrow morning. It'll be really early. As well as really early on Friday here. Looks like, it'll be relatively early on Friday as well. If I'm able to do that. Got a lot going on. Because I'm going to be going on this Appleton thing and I'm basically coming right back to the boat. Coming back to the boat and then going to Chicago. So maybe we'll have a big meetup in Chicago with all my fans. That'd be great. Thousands of people there lining the shore as we arrive. Doing the old royalty wave as we pass by. Look at all the little people. Well, they look little because we're far, because we're not close to shore yet. That's what I'm getting at. I'm not saying you're little people. I'm just saying you look little because we're, 2 miles offshore. Yeah. So that's the plan. That's the plan here in the News According to Me world. I don't know if you noticed or not, but I really don't have an agenda this morning. I decided just not to have an agenda. I have no notes in front of me. I'm just talking off the top of my head. which I don't normally have much of notes. And if you saw my notes, you'd think, how does that a show? See, I know how my brain works. I have to put down little giblets. I'm not sure what a giblet is. That's probably something that's not politically correct to say anymore. I put down these little notes and I talk about whatever. And that kind of keeps me on track in terms of things I wanted to talk about. Because I kind of enjoy the bunny trails. I don't know about you guys, but life is not so much on the beaten path. It's on those little side trails where you go off to take a pee. That's the reality of it, folks. That's where people get bit by snakes and bugs and all the interesting things that happen on a trip. No great story ever started off with, we walked down the path, nothing happened. And that's, okay, there you go, that's a story. That was exciting. Let's do a movie on that one. So, just saying, I'm just trying to give you a dose of reality here, folks. Just to look at life a little differently, from a different perspective. As I woke up this morning, I wondered what I would put in my cup. So far, this is my second cup, but it's something different in my cup now. My first cup was actually a mug, and it had hot chocolate with Cinnabon creamer in it. I ate an apple fritter with it. I heated up an apple fritter and hot chocolate. Because my house is, I know it's middle of summer. My wife likes to keep the house at about 65 degrees. I don't know why. Well, I mean, she has reasons, but I don't, can see my breath in here. And, of course, that's even outside, even in the summertime, even in 90-degree weather, I can see my breath. Because that's just part of my breath. And when I walk outside, my glasses fog over. That's what the temperature differential is, typically. Now, what's weird about this is that if I am in any place, I think I've become acclimated to it. I can be sitting in an airport or in another building or any place else in the world that's like 72 degrees, like the normal temperature that normal people would operate in through the summer, 75. If it gets up to 74, I'm sweating. And I have found myself, especially in these days of traveling again, that as I sit in an airport or sit in a building somewhere, I have a tendency to just sit there and sweat. I never used to do that. It's been going on for the past couple of months. And and it just kind of, I feel drained. Whenever I get hit, this is just an old age, maybe it's just an old age thing. Maybe I'm going through manpause or something. I don't know what I'm going through. But I have this, it's just weird because I'll be sitting someplace and I just feel hot. Now, I'm not talking about hot in a sense of, oh, he's hot. It's, ew, he's hot and stinky and sweaty. That's the kind of hot I'm talking about. I've never experienced the other one. I don't know what that would be like. I do have iced tea in my cup, though, right now. And this is the key. This is homemade sweet tea right now I have with ice. Maybe you can hear that. There's ice in my cup. The key to making it good. That's ice in my mouth there. Got a little chunk of ice slipped in. I put a splash, just a splash, maybe a tablespoon. You have to have a measure, in case you're keeping track of the of Snapple peach tea. I put that in my cup of homemade sweet tea. Just Lipton, regular Lipton black tea. Put this little splash of peach tea in there. So there's this hint of peach in my tea. And it kind of just makes it a little bit more kind of refreshing. I don't know. You know, I just kind of don't know what it is. It's kind of like what I do with my hot chocolate. I put a little, you know, flavored creamer in there. It's like people do with their coffee. I don't know why people don't do it with their hot chocolate. I don't drink coffee, so that's, I have to doctor up my hot chocolate. So that's my life. It's rough. It's a tough decisions. I have to make these decisions. Every day I have to make decisions on what I'm going to put in my cup. It's grueling. So so I was thinking this morning as I woke up, which doesn't always happen. I don't always think when I wake up. I just kind of get up and stumble around. Bang my toe. Pet the dog. Pet the other dog. Try to keep the cat from attacking my feet. He somehow thinks that that's a game. And then I stumble outside with one dog. The other dog doesn't like to go out in the morning. He just kind of sits there and looks at me as I ask him, if you want to go out and go do your thing? No, he just sits there and looks at me like, what are you talking about? I'm not a morning dog. So I let the other dog out. He runs around all over the place. And let him back in. Well, then the other dog doesn't like to go out until we go out front. The big dog just waits until we go out in the real yard, not the fenced-in yard in the back. He likes to go out front where there's plenty of room to run around, and yet he's not the one that runs around. He just likes to stand there and bark at the neighbors who are so far away that if they were close to him, he would just run away. If they actually looked at him and said anything, he would just run away. But he likes to be real far away from him so he can bark, hear his echo, hit their house, and bounce back. And he just acts like he's keeping them way far away from him by barking. Interesting dog. So I have a dog called a Beauceron. 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 It's a French dog. Check him out on YouTube. Personally, I think they're the best dogs in the world. Right up there with. We also have an Australian Shepherd, which I think also is probably one of the best dogs in the world. Highly energetic, extremely highly energetic dogs, and they're extremely smart. The Australian Shepherd. I'm not talking about the Beauceron. Most Beaucerons are fairly intelligent as well, but they are an extremely for a large breed dog. They have a look about them. They used these dogs. They've been around. The breed's been around for almost 300 years. But they used these dogs as one of the main dogs for creating the Doberman Pinscher. And they get confused a lot with as a Rottweiler. Some people think they're Rottweilers, or that they have part Rottweiler in them, but they are not. They have the coloration of a Rottweiler Doberman Pinscher. Actually, they look coloration is really almost identical to a Doberman. But they have more of the body of a German Shepherd with the short hair of a Rottweiler. So it's kind of with a large tail. They don't crop their tails. I guess there are some countries where they do. I guess some places they crop their ears and they crop their tail. And it's really there. I think that the AKC has said that that's not a legitimate breed. That that's not part of their show. If you cropped their ears and took them to a show, they would actually be judged lower for having their ears cropped. But this big bushy tail. Big, long, bushy tail and big, floppy ears. Just an excellent dog. Very well-mannered. The two of them get along very well. Now, my dog, people talk about they have rescue dogs. It was a rescue. because they adopted it. They didn't buy it from a pet store. That's what a rescue is. Now, ours was actually physically, this Beauceron was actually locked in a... He was locked in a cage for a year and a half in a puppy mill. I can't imagine. There was a raid on the puppy mill, and they got him out. And he was extremely scared of people. Had never been socialized. When he would get nervous, he would just run around in a circle, spin. Because that's all he could do in his cage. He was just basically in a little kennel cage type thing. And when he heard people's voices, he would get extremely nervous and run away. I've had him for probably 7 years now, I think. It was about a year and a half when we got him. They think. I'm not sure because there was no papers. And he's had some health problems a little bit. We got him fixed up pretty good now. He had some skin issues and some stuff like that. But had some tooth issues. Teeth. And he was extremely scared of people. In order to get him to come to me, I had to lay down on my back with a piece of steak in my hand. And he would come and get the piece of steak. And then walk away. Run away. I couldn't really talk at all. Couldn't talk to him. I would talk very, very softly. Whisper, basically. I walked him twice a day. And it started by walking him with, now he would follow me. This is what was weird about this. I could walk anywhere and he would walk right behind me. But the second I turned around, he would walk away. He, So what I ended up doing is I put him on a leash all the time. I would walk him, of course, obviously. And so I would put him on a long leash. I would walk backwards so that as he was, it would confuse him because he was following me, but I was facing him. It kind of reset his thinking because he was actually walking towards me, but I was walking away. So he got used to looking at my face. He got used to looking at me almost as if I was coming towards him. And then I would stop and he would continue to walk towards me. This took a little while. It was a couple months of doing this. I got really good at walking backwards. And, eventually after walking him twice a day at the park and we jump in the car and go to the park. We've got 7 acres here. I've got plenty of room to walk him, but I need to get out and do something else in another place. It's just, they need that. So I went through all this with him. And it took about a year. He was bonded completely to me, at one point, trusted me totally. I could be in my shop working. At this point now, he'll be laying at my feet. I'll be working on a grinder in my shop. I'll be working on something that's making all kinds of racket. And he'll be snoring. As long as he's up against my leg, he'll be snoring. Anyone else comes around, he's off in another room. Anybody else makes noises. I can talk, I can sing, I can do whatever. He just lays right there sleeping. Most of the time, he's under my desk when I'm doing the show. However, today, I'm at home, so because I have a cat, for some of you who have heard my earlier shows, you heard when I had my booth set up here at the home, I had a cat that used to like, I've got these big, thick foam walls. They're like 4 inches thick, made out of a poly something, I'm sure, some kind of rubber. So I'm in a rubber room, but I this big padding stuff I got for, it's like they're, I don't know what they're called, but they're, and I'm inside of that, I've got, inside I've got glued acoustic foam glued to that on the inside. Now, I have no door on it right now, so there's all kinds of sound that can get in. At least I don't have the door on right now. Because of the, I have this all set up in my finished basement. So I have this cat. Well, unfortunately, this stuff is really easy for a cat to climb up. He will climb all the way to the ceiling and crawl around on the ceiling. And of course, in this booth, you can hear it. Like it sounds like thunder in here. And he likes to jump around and crawl around here when I'm in here. He doesn't do it when I'm not here, of course, because that's no fun. He likes to show me what he can do. So I have to have the door closed down here. Now the dogs didn't follow me down. And I basically just close it up and come down here and do my little show. Yeah. So that's the story of my Beauceron. The story of my Australian Shepherd is very different. Maybe I'll share that story another time. Yeah. I'll keep you in suspense on that one. It's a very different story, but it's, yeah, I'm going to wait on that one. I'm not going to tell that one today. Maybe I'll tell that story next week. Soon. The story of Benji, the Wonder Dog. Really pretty incredible dog. So there you go. There's the story of my dogs. I have, as I was waking up this morning, I was thinking about, I was watching some videos. I usually wake up and got a couple things I do as I'm kind of waking up. I go online, do some stuff and check some emails, delete about 20,000 emails, look at three of them. And then, I usually play a little mind exercise game puzzle thing I do. Once I get that accomplished, that's when I stumble out of bed and do my dog routine. But in the middle of all that, sometimes I watch a video or two. I'll look to see what anybody's posted overnight or any kind of news that has happened overnight. And so I'll take a look at that. And Sky News Australia, of course, they're on the other side of the clock, so they're a lot of times they're posting stuff. I'll wake up and usually have about 20 Sky News Australia videos on YouTube that they posted through the night because it's night here and it's daytime there. So I look at that and then I was watching something. Usually that gets me off on bunny trails on YouTube, and I'll watch something else. But there's one little story I was hearing about this guy. And he's an Antifa guy who's a school teacher. Got all kinds of tattoos all over him and stuff. I don't care whether he has tattoos or not. It's just saying. He's got the kind of tattoos he had were... Yeah. So him and his wife are out walking their dog. Apparently, James O'Keefe from Project Veritas, apparently they went after, they were interviewing teachers, these radical teachers. And I guess this teacher happened to have an Antifa flag up in the, up in his classroom. Now, there's all kinds of radicalness going on in our public school system right now. And usually mostly city, larger population areas. One of the things that's happening, this one teacher was very proud of the fact that she had a pride flag up in her And she had all the other countries' flags up around the room, but she took down the American flag because that made her uncomfortable. And she had this pride flag up. Well, so I guess she kind of encouraged her kids to, because to stand up. She said they could stand up or sit down. They could do whatever they wanted to for the Pledge of Allegiance, or they could be silent, or they could speak say the Pledge of Allegiance in the morning. And I guess this one kid said, "Well, why don't you know we're saying the Pledge of Allegiance to nothing? Can you put the flag up?" Well, she was looking for the flag. She didn't know what happened to it. She claimed she didn't know what happened to it. I bet she probably threw it away. She probably uses it for a rag. And then she proceeded to say, "Well, we do have one flag up there, the Pride flag. You can pledge allegiance to the Pride flag." Okay. So, now think about the lunacy of this for a moment. These people hate this country. They hate this country. They hate America. They hate everything it stands for. And I'll get back to that. She's uncomfortable with the American flag for reasons because it's, you know, because it's racist. It's a racist country. That flag was based on racist principles. There's this train of thought, and it's a teaching now among some philosophies. That between the red and white stripes on the flag, there is a thin black thread there. If you look very closely, you'll see the thin black thread between the red and white stripes. Because it's that black thread that holds it all together, that built it. There's this idea among some academics that say that it was the African American, the black population, that built America. America would not have been an industrialized country without the contribution of the African American slave. This, of course, is not true. The industrialization was happening in the North. The South was primarily farmland. And if the innovation and industrialization, if they were very industrious and productive in their culture, then was it Watanda, whatever the name of the town is, or the amazing city in Africa is where the Black Panther comes from. That would have been a reality all over Africa. That wasn't the case. That's just not the culture. I'm not saying that the people are stupid or genetically less whatever, the inferior, I guess would be the word. That's not the case at all. It's a cultural issue. There were Germanic tribes in Europe that were far more savage than some of the savage tribes in South America. There are still cannibal tribes in parts of the world. They will eat their enemies because they think that they take on their power. That's not a genetic thing. That's a cultural, philosophical issue. And we ignore culture because we color it with a skin color. Say, "Well, you don't like me because of my skin color." No, I don't like you because of what you believe. Or I should say, I don't like what you believe. I don't like you because you push it on me. Now, I'm happy to share with you the story of the truth about the gospel. Whether you receive it or not, it's up to you. I'm not going to push it on you. Certainly not going to tell you that if you don't accept Christ as your Savior, that I'm going to... You know, the Crusades, this is the problem with the Crusades. Now, the Crusades are very misunderstood, by the way, because they've been retold. The story and the history have all been redone. They start at a certain point in history, for one thing, and they negate why the Crusades even happened, why they started to begin with. The Crusades, basically, they would march into a city and say, you know, bend the knee and accept Christ or we're going to kill you. Oh, okay, well, I guess I'll go ahead and do that then. So we have this issue here of these people that had these flags up. Okay, so she had this flag up, and she was telling the kids to pledge allegiance to the pride flag. So their teacher, we have, interestingly enough, he's an Antifa guy. He has an Antifa flag. Well, one of the students said, that flag makes me uncomfortable. Well, it's an anti-fascism flag, and if an anti-fascism flag makes you uncomfortable, that flag was designed, it should make fascists uncomfortable. So if you're uncomfortable, I guess, you know, what does that say about you? That was his response. The kid's a fascist. He's a racist. So this individual, walking down the street with his obviously very wacky wife, both of them very woke. Walking down the street in this, just out for their walk and their dog, I guess. And this African-American reporter tries to ask them questions. And they ignore him and they walk away and they tell him to keep his distance. You're making me uncomfortable. I guess you're uncomfortable because a black man is too close to you, which makes you a racist. Continues to ask them questions about why they have an Antifa flag in their classroom, the radical teachings. Because he made some statements about creating, give me 120 days and I'll create a revolutionary. I have 120 days to convert these kids to being revolutionaries. They were confronting him about some of the statements he'd made. And, interesting. It was interesting how they treated the man, how they treated this reporter trying to ask them questions. And for some reason, the thought came to my mind, you know, wouldn't it be better just to start? And these people were like really radicalized and just the lower rung of the philosophical society, part of in terms of the philosophies that they believed in is just pathetic and sickening. The whole Antifa movement, the anti-fascism movement, is at its core fascists. They don't even realize it. Which, you know, always makes me wonder what kind of blind spots do I have? I mean, it always causes me to take a pause and step back and wonder and have a moment of self-reflection and try to understand myself better. To be self-aware. Not self-absorbed, but self-aware. You know, implicit bias and all those kinds of things, you won't know if you have implicit bias because that's the whole nature of implicit bias. All of us have it. Doesn't matter what your skin color is, and doesn't matter what it's about. It can be about philosophical issues or whatever. It can be gender issues, whatever it is. No one is exempt from it. And those who are supposedly woke are these people who are totally aware of themselves, and they're totally aware of their implicit bias and all the injustice in the world. So they seek to right all this injustice by being unjust with other people. And they don't even realize it. They use fascist techniques to push their anti-fascism on other people. Violence, threats, destruction of personal property. All in the name of, well, I'm right. You're wrong. Down with the establishment. Gee, that's unique. Haven't heard that since the 60s. So, at some point, these people grow up. See, this is where I struggle here. I just want to take people like that and just, you know, this is not something I would act on. Just like, why doesn't God strike these people down? Why don't we just eliminate these people from our society? What would happen if we just started, you know, going out picking off these people? Here's the problem with that. Now, if I was God, I would just start, beep, tink, you know, just take my little finger and go, boop, just pluck you off the earth. Just weed you right out of there. Here's the problem with that. There was a man by the name of Rabbi Shaul. We would know him in the New Testament by the name of Saul. He was known among the Gentiles as Paul, the Apostle. Prior to coming to Christ, Rabbi Shaul was leading the charge to persecute Christians, held the coats of some while they were stoned, the coats of those who were throwing the stones. He approved of it. Christians in that day were terrified of him. They knew if he was coming to town, he was coming to town to eradicate them. He was on a mission. Now, if I would have been there in that day, in that time, I probably would have sought out a way to eliminate him permanently. How would that have changed history? And these are just thoughts that go through my head. The pondering of the philosophical ways of our world. Here is the irony of all of that. Rabbi Shaul became the man who wrote the majority of the New Testament. Had I been there to eliminate him and protect Christians, it may have completely changed God's plan. I would have been interfering in something I knew nothing about. This Antifa fella and his wife. Could be the next Apostle Paul. Who knows what God can do to this guy's heart with his passion for justice? If he finds himself at the foot of the cross, realizing his selfishness and his sin, gives his heart to Jesus, to the Messiah. Who knows what God can do with that? And I am not going to be one, you know, I'll argue with him all day long. I'll disagree with him. I have the right to do that. I can also believe for the best in the man, because I know that today a person's heart is one way. I know that God can change it in a flash of a blink of an eye. So as we go about our day, let's not be too quick to judge someone permanently because of the state of their heart today. Because, folks, I got news for you. This is the irony of this whole thing. We all came from the same pit of sin. If you want to look at someone else and say, "Oh, yeah, but I wasn't like that. I was raised in the church. I was never a bad boy. I was never a bad kid. I didn't really commit any really bad sins." What? What are you talking about? It just blows my mind. Because I was that kid, folks. I was a kid who grew up in the church. I didn't drink, didn't smoke, didn't chew, didn't run with those who do. Literally, if I found out you were drinking, I wouldn't be your friend. Going through high school. And I'll tell you something, I was, and it wasn't necessarily just because of religious things, it was just that way. And I just believed in God, and but I wasn't like a radical Christian kid. I was, I went to church. But you know what? It was self-righteousness. And while, yeah, it kept me from doing things that I regretted in that respect, but that self-righteousness was more offensive, in my opinion, to God. Than if I had been out smoking and drinking. You want to talk about someone who was saved from deeply deprived situation. Depraved situation. Not deprived, depraved. Depravity. That was me. I think it took more to shake me out of that self-righteous, holier-than-thou mentality than just, to convince somebody that they're committing some sins against themselves. Because what I was saying was, what God did on the cross, that was all well and good, but I'm adding to it somehow because I'm being good. Because I'm being righteous, zealous. Yeah. We all come from that. We all come from, all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. All. Have. If we can somehow look past our wonderfulness and our greatness, for our goodness for having received something that we didn't earn on our own and didn't deserve, and see that invitation stands for everyone, even those we despise. If we can get past that, and if the leaders of the church in this hour, in this time, will stand up and begin to once again preach the truth and not just some life-applicable message, a feel-good social club that we can go to, and because it's all about the numbers, we've got to keep those numbers coming in every week so we can keep our budget, so we can have our $15,000 a week budget met, so that the show can keep going. Don't want to upset that apple cart by preaching something controversial or truthful or start confronting people about their selfishness and their pride and their arrogance and the depth of their sin and the ugliness of their sin and the consequences of sin. Oh, no, we can't talk about that. Because that would be, that might scare people away, and it would come across as being mean and hateful. Besides, they wouldn't come back next week, and then we wouldn't get as much money. Leaders in the church need to rise up in this hour. We are facing a crisis, and if the church doesn't step up, there's no hope for our society. I was listening to another YouTuber this morning, and she was talking about how she's very saturated with, and just, you could just tell her she's getting hopeless for society in general. Doesn't just kind of wonders if this is even going to be, if there's any hope anymore for society in general. And I don't know what she believes. I have no idea. She's more of a political pundit style person. Comes from Australia. Now comments more about, she's living in the States now, I guess, and has just started co-hosting a show. There's a guy by the name of Elijah Schaefer. He does a show called Slightly Offensive. I think he actually comes from a very conservative Bible background, evangelical Bible background. However, he's not, I don't know. He talks about faith once in a while and talks about scripture and stuff, but he's also he's certainly pretty loosey-goosey about some things. Because it is slightly offensive. That's the name of the show. And he goes, it is slightly offensive. He now is co-hosting, I think, a show on the Blaze Network with Sydney Watson is her name. And anyway, I was just thinking, I blame the church for people being in this situation where it's, scripture says that men's hearts will fail them for what's coming on the earth. And I think that's the point where we're almost at now. We're giving up hope. Because the message from the church right now has just been, in my opinion, it's so watered down. And it's the church really that should be defining the lines, not graying the lines. Now there's a lot more gray area than what I think we would like to believe in the church. When we our Greek mindset in the church and our Greek mindset in Western culture is that we want to just get things figured out and know what's right and what's wrong. It's either right or it's wrong. And unfortunately, it's not even a Hebrew way of thinking. It's not even a biblical way of thinking, because there are some situations, and I'm not talking about situational morality here, situational ethics, but to some degree, there is some of that. That is, there's something there, because Rahab lied to protect the spies. She lied. And she was given a historical monument, basically, in history for doing so, and became part of the lineage of Israel for doing so. There are plenty of places in Scripture where, when it comes to protecting life, you have to do what's right. And so sometimes it's not about choosing between what's good and what's bad, or what's right and what's wrong. Sometimes it's between choosing what's really wrong and really bad, and what's not as bad. And this is not the end justifies the means, or the for the greater good we have to sacrifice our whatever. It's not about that at all. It's just about being ultimately understanding of the times and being aware of, you know, the moment. So I say all that to say this, and I hope that you've understood the underlying current of what I'm saying here is God is the one who has the plan. He's the one who sees from beginning to end. He's the Alpha and Omega, the beginning and the end. He understands none of this is taking him by surprise, and he has it all under his authority. People say God is in control. God is in control of his kingdom. It's the world that's out of control. When you see an out of control world, it's not God's fault. See, that's the problem with saying God's in control. Well, then why is he allowing this stuff to happen? So that's why he's in control. He's in control of his kingdom. His kingdom has order. The world's kingdom, the enemy's kingdom, is chaos. And yet God can rule and reign and be completely at peace in the midst of that chaos, because he's bigger than the chaos. You've seen the, probably all seen the meme. The storm was coming. And the enemy whispered in my ear or whatever, said something to me. He said, see, the storm is coming. Nothing you can do about it. And I yelled back, I am the storm. Whatever. Yeah, whatever. I'm not the storm. But I know the one who is. He will not fail us. He will not leave us. He will not leave us as orphans. The key here is that we trust in him. If you've ever seen, I just remind of a little picture of when I was a kid. And you've seen kids do this all the time, but I remember this too. When I was really little, and there were situations where there was just a lot of confusion. And when you're little, really little, and you're walking around in a room full of people, and I remember doing this at church specifically. I remember exactly what church it was, and I know where we were. I think I was probably 3 years old. Maybe. And it's after church, and people are walking around, and there's just a lot of people talking and walking. They're, you know, doing their fellowship thing after church. It was a very conservative church. It wasn't very large. I mean, to me, it seemed huge, of course, because I was, you know, a third the size I am now. So to me, everything was a lot bigger back then. I go back and look at that building. I'm like, how did we all even get in there? It just looked a lot bigger to me when I was a kid. So, and it was because I was smaller. That's just, you know, it's all about perspective and scale. So we, after church, and it's just confusing because all these big, tall people are walking around, and I'm afraid I'm going to get stepped on by some of these people. They can't see me down there. My dad was what was called the chorister. He was a song leader, led the hymns. And a lot of times people would talk to him after church, and he's standing there, and all these people are walking around, and he's yakking away, and everybody's talking about whatever. And I remember just wrapping my arms around his leg. Because I didn't want to get stepped on in all this confusion. I knew the one person in the room that wasn't going to step on me, probably, at least on purpose, was my dad. Somehow I knew if I was holding on to him, I'd be okay. Oh, what a picture of where the church needs to be today. In all the scuffle and everything that's going on around us, I'm not saying we're supposed to be cowardly little children. But we do need to be holding onto his leg. Trusting in him. That's what it was all about. I trusted my dad. And we need to have trust and faith now. Because peace, in the midst of chaos, peace is the one thing that stands out like a sore thumb. I was recently on a boat. Had a buddy of mine on the boat. And we got into a storm. It was bad. 55 knot winds, 12 foot waves. On Lake Michigan. You know anything about the waves on Lake Michigan? That's pretty bad, because they're pretty frequent. It's just nasty. And the nighttime was approaching. We had another 3 or 4 hours to go to get to the harbor we need to go to. Motor wasn't working, because a rope got caught in the prop because Bug got knocked down just about. But, I mean, it's not that that's a big deal. It happens. And get, you know, sailboats get knocked back up again. They get, you know. But it's a difficult situation. Now, I've learned through many years of discipline in dealing with emergency situations that panic is not your friend. You do the things you can do that are before you to do, you just get them done. And that's all you can do. Just stay focused on those things. If you lose sight of that, you will panic and you will probably not get done what needs to be done at the moment, and you will probably die. Or the situation will get worse. So I just remained calm. Laughed it off, basically. Let's just get this done. Because of that, he remained calm. He told me afterwards, he says, you stayed calm, so I stayed calm. He wanted to panic. Everything in him wanted to panic. But because I was just continuing to move forward and doing what needed to be done, he just went along with that. Peace in the midst of chaos can speak louder sometimes than you realize. So let's be those people of peace that abide in peace that goes beyond understanding, that no one around us, when they see us at peace in the midst of this storm, that they realize, there's something different going on there. So, having said all of that, like I said, I had no agenda today. I just wanted to speak from my heart because ultimately, you know, I kind of want to do each show like it's my last show. I don't know. I don't know when I'm going to go. I do a lot of traveling. I do a lot of stuff all over the world, all over the country. I have a boat that I sail through storms. Well, anything could happen. I live out there in the world. COVID, the zombie apocalypse. You know, anything could take me at any moment. Drink a lot of sweet tea. Who knows? I just want to be ready. God bless everybody. Have a great day. Keep praying for our nation.